question I'm going to ask is, how bad was it when the Jews heard about the decree that Haman had made? How bad could that have been? They obviously made a three-day fast day, 3 days with fasting, which was straight one after the other after the other. And to my knowledge, and maybe somebody could correct me on this, I don't believe we ever made a three-day fast day for anything in Klal Yisrael except for this. And this, I'll tell you, honestly, and I was speaking to some people about this before, I don't even know what the issue was. I don't know what the problem was. That a year from now, there might be an issue of one day when the Jews had to be killed. Now, granted, for every Jew that possibly could be killed, you should fast. But for 3 days straight, and they thought they had to do it right then, isn't that a strange thing? We've had situations like this before. We fasted before. But for 3 days straight, over Pesach? Over Pesach, they missed the Seder twice in a row. For this, for what might happen in the future in 11 months, it's a very, very strange thing. There are times of the Churban Bayis. We never find this. We find Rav Tzadok fasting every day, that the Beis HaMikdash shouldn't be destroyed. But do we ever see that the people got together and they made a public declaration of a fast day? I just don't see it. I'm not saying it doesn't exist. I just don't see what it was. I'm reading a book now. I think everybody should read it. It's really a kid's book, like an older kid's book. But it was written by about the story of Izzy Stark, who's a man who lives here in Chicago, about his story in the Holocaust and what happened in Munkach, where he was a child, 7, 8 years old. He was a child when everything happened with the Holocaust. They didn't see it coming at all. But they did. They knew something was going on. But at the same point, they just had no idea. Things were so confusing. They didn't know what to daven for, what to ask for. I can't imagine this is any different of what was happening with Haman. Were the people that clear that everything was going to happen? I'm just not positive. And sometimes that three-day fast clearly was the solution they needed it. But I think we have to start thinking in a different fashion for our lives and where we are. Hashem provides us the answer without us even lifting up a finger. Of course we need to daven for it. And of course we need to fast for it. There has to be a tshuva process involved. But the truth is, everything's right there without us doing anything. I want you to think of what it was like, the tefillos and the effect that they had in Shemayim, of v'nehafachu, where everything turned around and everything became better in a second. And think of how that happened. And in the future, it's supposed to be that way as well, where somehow we daven and somehow everything turns around in a second. And it's completely different, turns it on its head. From the things that you thought were the very worst things in the world, that's where we got all of our schus. I'm going to give a mashal for this. Now, I have this mashal based on what Rabbi Levin told me, changed some of the details, but the idea should still be the same thing. Mashal is like this. To almost everybody, Zaidi looked like just another old man. This particular Yid didn't seem in any way extraordinary than anybody else. He was just Zaidi. He was a Zaidi. That's all he was. He had children. He had grandchildren. He was particularly close with one of his grandchildren named Yaakov. Yaakov was one of his younger grandchildren, but he was particularly close with him. Each day, he, Yaakov, and his grandfather would go for a walk together. Every day, Yaakov would find time, make sure they would go for a walk. Yaakov was an intelligent young man, and he understood something about his Zaidi that other people didn't recognize. This Zaidi is a big Talmid Chacham. This Zaidi knows something. He's a hidden tzaddik. Now, it could be that other grandfathers and other Zaidis are also hidden tzaddiks, and they're also big Talmid Chachamim. That's a possibility. But he knew, he absolutely knew, this, my Zaidi, is a hidden tzaddik. He is a massive, massive tzaddik, and he absolutely knew it. Yaakov understood that these walks were opportunities to expand his horizon and to be able to get things that he would never be able to get from anyone else. So he utilized them. Zaidi still remembered, because it wasn't that long ago, from his youth, the Beis HaMikdash. Now, he was quiet with everyone else on this subject. When people would ask him about the Beis HaMikdash and what it was like, Zaidi wouldn't say anything. But with Yaakov, he was quite talkative. He was emotional about it. He was passionate about what the Beis HaMikdash was like. As they walked through the streets of Shushan, they kept mainly to the side streets, to the alleyways. They wanted to keep away from the main streets because they knew if you walked in the main streets and Haman walked by, you had to bow down to him. They stayed away from the main streets, and instead, they went to the smaller little streets on the side instead of the main boulevards. That way, Grandpa would never, ever have to bow down to him. Zadie would never have anything to do with him. That was the best way. Zadie remembered Mordechai at Tzaddik very, very well. Mordechai at Tzaddik, everybody knew Mordechai at Tzaddik. He was a tzaddik back in the days when the Beis HaMikdash was still around, let alone now in Bavel, in Shushan, I should say, right from where he was. He often wondered, and he said out loud, why Mordechai was provoking this Rosh Haman by not bowing down to him instead of just avoiding confrontation like he was doing. Besides talking and learning with Yaakov and being busy with the many branches of Avodas Hashem and telling Yaakov what he thought, what he was thinking, etc., Zadie was also preoccupied with the future, the second, or in their minds, the only Beis HaMikdash. Will I live to see it? He said to Yaakov. He said, you, Yaakov, for sure you're going to see it. The 70 years are almost up. The 70 years, however you cheshbin them out, are almost up. You're going to be able to see it. But am I going to be able to see it? Am I going to be able to see everything? My years are ending. And he would depict the greatness, the beauty, the glory, the holiness, the gold, the silver that would be there. He would explain how lofty of a level everything would be, everybody would be, when they were walking into the Beis HaMikdash, how awesome it was to walk into such a place. One day, I was walking through a neighborhood of very, very wealthy Yidden that were living in these big mansions, big houses, estates in Shushan. Yaakov pointed out to Zadie all these Yidden with their gold and their silver and everything they had. And he said, you know, Zadie, for sure these people are going to want to donate their money to the construction of the new Beis HaMikdash. They're going to want to use it for what's going to be. But, he asked Zadie, if the government finally allows us to start rebuilding, if somehow Achashverosh changes his mind and allows us to go back to what Kores allowed us to do a few years ago, and we can go back to the Beis HaMikdash and rebuild it, is there gold and silver? Is it covetic enough? Are they on a high level enough to be able to donate their money to the Beis HaMikdash? Is that possible? You have to be on a high level to go into the Beis HaMikdash. Surely the gold and silver that are being used to donate, that has to be on a high level enough as well, right? So is their money going to be used? So Zadie was quiet for a very, very long time. They walked through the streets. He didn't say anything. Yaakov realized from his silence that he had asked a very important question. When Zadie didn't answer him immediately, understood that meant something. There's a reason why he's not answering him immediately. So he also sensed that Zadie had special, unique ideas on this subject, and that he wasn't going to relinquish them very quickly. He had to say something. He hoped that eventually, on a future walk, at just the right moment, when something would happen, Zadie would reveal the secret to him. And at that point, he would be happy. And he always did. Zadie always did. Inevitably, sometime it was going to happen. Yaakov waited. And sure enough, when Zadie was in the mood to speak about his favorite subject, the Beis HaMikdash again, Yaakov was ready and he was waiting to push the right buttons. He's ready to do it. And he said to Zadie, after Zadie elaborated after the holiness of the Beis HaMikdash and what it's going to be like and how awesome it's going to be and going on, how you have to ascend to lofty levels, Yaakov asked once again, where is such gold and silver going to be found? Where are we going to have gold and silver that could be used to create such a holy Beis HaMikdash? How is it possible? Whose money is going to be accepted? Whose money is going to be able to be used for that? Yaakov knew this time Zadie was going to answer his question. And sure enough, Zadie gave a faraway look. He looked far away in a certain direction. And even Yaakov, his Talmud, his confidant, the person with him all the night, he hadn't seen this too often at all. And finally said, listen, Yaakov, your question is not a question. Donations? Donations from Jews? No need. All the gold and the silver of the new Beis HaMikdash is ready and waiting for us to take. Nobody will have to donate. There will be no donations necessary. As he said this, he was staring at a certain part of Shushan as if the gold was right there in front of him. It almost startled Yaakov. Yaakov couldn't understand what he was looking at. He didn't doubt for a second that his Zadie had a very important secret to tell him, and he just wasn't ready to get it. He didn't say anything. A couple weeks later, on their daily walk, Zadie led Yaakov to a certain neighborhood that he never brought him to before. This was a certain part of the neighborhood where the prime minister lived, where Haman was part of. He avoided this neighborhood like the plague because he knew if he was walking in the streets and Haman came by, he would have to bow down. He wasn't willing to bow down. But this time he went there cautiously, going from side street to side street, checking both ways to make sure Haman wasn't coming. But nonetheless, he got as close as he could to the Prime Minister Haman's house. Zadie stood in between two buildings, and from this vantage point, he was able to see through the huge ornate windows that Haman had in his house. He was able to see the gold and silver and the chandeliers, the crystals, all hanging down. The light shining off everything, everything really shiny and beautiful of this hated, destructive man. Everyone knew that Haman was fabulously wealthy. They all knew that. "Why'd you bring us here?" Yaakov said to his Zadie. And Zadie said, "Yaakov, you're going to see the gold and the silver in the new Beis HaMikdash. When the new Beis HaMikdash is rebuilt, you're going to be there and you're going to see it yourself. I hope I live long enough to travel back to Yerushalayim to see it, but I wanted to see it now." Yaakov didn't understand, but he knew that in order to maintain the mood, he had to remain silent. You don't ask questions. You figure it out on your own, or he'll tell you, and if not, then you're not ready to hear. Zadie strained to achieve different angles, to see every little thing that's there, strained his neck to look in every single room of Haman. He cried. And eventually he sighed and he turned to leave. After a long time, when they were back to the Jewish neighborhood, Zadie said to Yaakov, "You're smart enough to keep such an important secret to yourself. Haman's wealth is destined for the Beis HaMikdash, but the time is not ripe yet. When the time's ripe, that gold and that silver will build the Beis HaMikdash. It's all of his gold and his silver that'll be used to rebuild the Beis HaMikdash." Now, I don't know if Zadie got to see the second Beis HaMikdash. I don't know if Yaakov went. But the likelihood is that Yaakov ended up going with Zerubbabel back to Yerushalayim a couple of years before Ezra went there. By that time, it was common knowledge that the late Emperor Ahasuerus had awarded all of Haman's home, his wealth, everything he had, to his Queen Esther. Queen Esther gave all of the wealth of not only Haman, but Haman's kids and Haman's grandkids and whoever was there. All of the wealth of Haman ended up going to who? Not just to Esther, but Esther gave it over to Mordechai. Mordechai, the new prime minister, Uncle Mordechai, Hatzadik, donated all of it to the new Beis HaMikdash, which was licensed to be built by the son of Ahasuerus, known as Daryavish II. The wealth of Haman directly went to build the Beis HaMikdash. When we wonder, is anyone's money kosher? What are we going to do? The answer is right there in front of our eyes. And if you sit there and you say again, you look up at Har HaBayis, you should sigh audibly and you should cry outwardly. What you're seeing right now, the manifestation of a temple, of whatever, a mosque, sitting on the holiest spot that we have, the holiest spot in the world, you should sit there and you should cry. Because on our life, I don't know if it's going to be in our lifetimes, hopefully in my children's lifetime, we're going to be able to go up to Har HaBayis and bring our korbanos and see the Beis HaMikdash and its glory and its splendor and everything there. But you can laugh like Rabbi Akiva did, and Rabbi Akiva saw the exact same sight. He's watching the Romans and he's seeing the laughter and the frivolity, the destruction of the Beis HaMikdash, the area that was there. Rabbi Akiva laughed when everyone else was crying. Because if you look closely, if you look very carefully, you know what you're going to see? You're going to see all the gold and silver that we're going to need for the new Beis HaMikdash. And sitting right there, ready to be taken. On top of the mosque. Sitting right there for us to be used, for us to use, and for us to take. Sitting there and waiting for the future Beis HaMikdash. When we start looking at the things that we have, and yes, there's pain and there's problems and there's issues, but we start realizing that HaKadosh Baruch Hu has already made truthful amakaso, the refuah is right there for us to have, it's sitting there in our hands, and all we have to do is take it, that's an amazing, amazing level to understand, to think about, and to keep for ourselves. It's a secret. But it's not an outward secret. It already happened once. It already happened twice. It happened in Mitzrayim with the gold of the Egyptians. It happened in when we came back in the second Beis HaMikdash with the gold of Koresh, which he had taken from Nebuchadnezzar, which Nebuchadnezzar had taken from the Jews themselves, and then with Haman, and it'll happen in the third Beis HaMikdash as well. The world is fabulously wealthy. The Beis HaMikdash will be an unbelievable building. We just have to believe that the amount of gold and silver and beauty that HaKadosh Baruch Hu has put in the world is sitting there waiting for us to take for the third base of Mikdash. We should be zocheh to see it in our lifetimes, everyone.